The overall lesson of Numbers 12 is not to lift yourself up above or at the expense of others. In this study, Richard looks at how Miriam and Aharon presumed that their younger brother, Moshe, had the same type of relationship with God as they enjoyed. The older siblings complained that Moshe was ruler over them. They had no idea how intimately God spoke with Moshe up until now.
It's a very short chapter, but I believe there's going to be an awful lot of things that need to be brought out. And it's the 12th chapter of the book of Numbers. It's a very short chapter.
Numbers chapter 12. Miriam and Aharon spoke against Moshe because of the Cushite woman whom he had married. For he had married a Cushite woman. And they had said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moshe? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moshe was very meek, more than all people who were on the face of the earth. And suddenly the Lord said to Moshe and to Aharon and Miriam, "Come out, you three, to the tent of meeting." And the three of them came out. And the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the entrance of the tent and called Aharon and Miriam. And they both came forward. And he said, "Hear my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moshe. He is faithful in all my house. With him I speak mouth to mouth, clearly, and not in riddles, and he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then are you not afraid to speak against my servant Moshe?" And the anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. When the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous like snow. And Aharon turned toward Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aharon said to Moshe, "Oh, my Lord, please don't punish us because we have done foolishly and have sinned. Let her not be as one dead whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes out of his mother's womb." And Moshe cried to the Lord, "Oh God, please heal her, please." But the Lord said to Moshe, "If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be shamed 7 days? Let her be shut outside the camp 7 days, and after that she may be brought in again." So Miriam was shut outside the camp 7 days, and the people did not set out on the march till Miriam was brought in again. After that, the people set out from Hazarot and camped in the wilderness of Paran.
Chapter, right? Any thoughts?
As I was saying, I did my homework. This is what I got out of it, or these are the questions I got out of it. Was Moses still married to Jethro's daughter Zipporah when he married the Canaanite? Okay, that was question one. Moses was called a friend of Yah. As far as I know, Aaron and Miriam did not hold that title. I recently found scripture that states that every time we speak to Abba and have respect for his name, it is recorded in one of his many books, in Malachi 3:16. So my question here, is there also a book that we speak contrary to his name?
What was the last question?
Is there a book that is recorded when we speak contrary to Yah's name? Okay. And, well, that's not a good, anyway. So that was the question. And then the last one was, Jehovah came down in a pillar of a cloud to speak to Aaron and Miriam and Moses. Maybe it's just me, but if I was Miriam, if I was in Miriam's place being called to the carpet by Abba, I believe I would be white with fright for just that reason alone. Possibly confirmed in verse 14 where it says, Miriam had Tisseret, I'm sorry, that says, if her father called her merely, if her father had merely spit in her face, wouldn't she hide herself for shame for 7 days?
Next.
What is humble, and what does humble look like in behavior?
Oh, my. why? Okay. That's a good question. And it's relatively easy. Yes, Ellie.
The one thing that always grabs me about this is, and the Lord heard it.
That's the term. Remember in the previous chapter, when they were speaking bad, didn't tell you what they're speaking bad about. That chapter, this is very fascinating. Now we're going to chapter 11. Now we're going to chapter 12. Chapter 11 was about people speaking bad. And God heard it, and he brought forth the plague. The next one we hear, that Moses heard the people speaking bad, a different time, a different event. Remember, the book of Numbers is not in chronological order. Neither is a book of Exodus in chronological order. It's about events, events. This one is related to this one, it's related to this one. And so we have a series here, and we'll find out that's very common, in the more common in the book of Numbers than any other book. It's really easy to spot. You'll also find in the book of Numbers, we'll probably never reach there at this point in time, but there's comment of this very same story, the book of Numbers. It's also recorded in the book of Judges, because it actually happened in the book of Judges. At the time of the book of Judges, not during the time of Numbers. Now we say, what's chaos and confusion? No, because there's the men of the great assembly. How many people know who they are? Men of the great assembly. 70 men, 120 men, 120. Now there was 120 in the book of Acts. Remember that? Now during the time of Ezra, there's 120 who compiled and put together all of what we have is known as the Tanakh. Those are called the men of the great assembly. That's a biblical term in the book of Ezra in relationship to, and they name all 70 of them. But the book of Acts, it doesn't name the 70. It just names the apostles. But you know there's women in there? And so women are not excluded. They in, quote, the great assembly in the New Testament. They are very much a part of it. Now listen. Did I answer that question somewhat? Did somebody ask that question? I guess they didn't. Anyway, here I'm off on another tangent. What is humbleness? What is the evidence of humbleness that Moses portrayed? It, in anything in his life, from the time we started reading about the book of Exodus and the story of Moses, was there any time that he was arrogant? Proud, person who just challenged God in arrogance and ignorance and foolishness. No. What did he do? He was afraid of and frightened of and respecting the creator of heaven and earth. Now, what does humbleness mean before God? Don't lift yourself above others. Now, Moses did it once. We'll see that. And it cost him going in. It's in the book of Numbers. But that's much later on down the book of Numbers. But we're talking about a man who is humble. What is a humble person like? And even our definition, yes, tell them what a humble person is like.
There's a difference in humility before God versus humility before men, because Moses was humble before God, but he wasn't humble before Pharaoh. Pharaoh was a king.
Humble. No.
He did not lower himself below Pharaoh.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. But he did not consider himself what? Better? More of greater value? More importance? No, he didn't, because God said, you just do what I told you to do. So he humbled himself before the creator of heaven and earth, not before Pharaoh. The only reason why he had to challenge Pharaoh, not because Moses was brave and arrogant and proud and think of himself a mighty man. He was one terrified person. And you remember what he said? When it didn't happen according to what Moses thought was going to happen, Moses turned to God and says, you said you would leave these people out and get them. And look, it's gotten worse. Because he trusted God would deliver them out. Well, then God turned around to him and says, you wait and see what I'm going to do now, Moses. So Moses had to be corrected as a man. By God, that becomes what? Did he stand up and say, who are you, God, to tell me correct? You went against your word. You lied to me. No, he didn't. He shut his mouth up and waited. When a humble person is a person who does not rise himself up and above others. Now, one, he was called to go down there. Okay, during the incident when he was, quote, part of the royal family, end of quote, but he really never was. What was his object? Why did he go out and visit those various people that were part of his family? And he saw an Egyptian kill one of them. And what does he do? Because he's some great relative and he's an adopted and he's got the power and authority of the son of Pharaoh's daughter that he can order the death of this Egyptian? No. He had no authority. I know Sesame DeMille puts him way up there as one of the most powerful men that ever, and the cartoon. But he was afraid and scared. Was not a man of great honor and respect. He was just Moses. Afraid that when he killed that Egyptian, he was hoping no one knew it. And he buried him. Thinking he can get away with it. Does that sound like a man who has said, I'm not afraid to kill anybody. I'm proud. I'm going to kill him, a fighter. No. He was, put it honestly, he was afraid. Let's put it in different words. We might use the day he was a coward. We might use that phrase. Because he's so cowardice that he made sure no one saw him kill him. And he made sure he was buried and no one knew about it. Now a brave man, arrogant man, a foolish man, would boast, not Moses, even when he was part of this family. And guess what happened? When one of the people of his family, or not his family, but of the house of Israel, threatened him. Who are you? You have no authority over us, period. That's the truth. We say, oh no, he had authority. No, that Israelite knew, he, Moses, had no authority over them. He cannot judge them. He cannot rule over them. He can't make any statement against them because he wasn't the boss. But Sesame DeMille made him a boss. And we have this planted in our brain that Sesame DeMille must have been there. Sesame DeMille, the man who wrote this, the Ten Commandment movie. I'm getting old, aren't I?
Nice Jewish man.
I've seen the movie. It just doesn't look amazing.
Oh, I'm sorry. But, you know, so we see, and when God had to call him 40 years later at the age of 80, was he a brave man standing up there in the bush? Oh, yeah, okay. What do you want to do, God? I'll go do it. Was he afraid? He tried to get out of it the best he can. Now, is that an arrogant man? Or is that a man that has no confidence within himself? He was a man who had no confidence in himself. He didn't have confidence in himself when he killed the Egyptian. He didn't have confidence in himself no matter what happened. He knew something was. He didn't fit into the picture of an Egyptian. He knew he fit in the picture of his family. He wasn't arrogant. He was humble. Never boastful. Now, he's made some verbal mistakes, but that's a part of humans. But he never thought that he was greater than the rest. He got angry. Being angry is not meaning you are arrogant. This means you're angry. What do you have to do when you lose your anger? Change it. That's what you have to do, right? Okay, so let's go back. Let's back here in Numbers, 12th chapter, and verse 1. I would like for someone to say, what was the issue? Really? Okay, you remember the multitude? Yes. Oh, make a statement.
The Cushite woman is an excuse.
Repeat.
The Cushite woman is an excuse for a far greater grievance.
That's right. It's the surface of the stuff, but not the...
They're picking a easy target.
Easy target.
This woman that this newlywed wife.
He's not. She actually came. No, remember when there's a multitude that came out? They're not part of Israel. Some of them were Cushite people. They were slaves too. And guess what? Go ahead.
And so, you know, someone was asking earlier, is this another term for Zipporah? And of my opinion, no. This is a different woman because Zipporah was a Midianite.
It's good. It's two different women.
Whereas this is a different woman.
Now, they don't know. We don't know. They're under Jewish scholars. They believe it was his second wife. But not because the first one died. They don't know. They didn't accept, but because the issue is not the woman. If this chapter is about the woman, God would have addressed it. But it wasn't. I'm going to teach you people something very fascinating thing that I don't know if you understand. But do you know what the name Miriam means? What?
Bitter.
A what?
Bitter.
It translated means a rebellious woman. One who's a rebellion. Now, pay attention. Nowhere else in the entire Bible is Miriam ever corrected again. No. It's very important. Now, why is it starting out with her name rather than Aaron and Miriam? Oh, because she enticed him to do something. Well, no, they were together in it. That's what it says. Don't pass the buck on to the one. It's her fault. Both. Now, this is an interesting thing. And God said, I'm angry at both of you. Didn't say, I'm angry at you, Miriam. Aaron, okay, you were naive. You were deceived, right? No. I'm mad at you, too.
He didn't get a correction.
Well, now we have to figure this out. Why did not God curse him?
No, he didn't get
a correction. He got a scot-free.
Yeah.
Right? He got scot-free. Let's continue on with the story. I want to tell you what the Miriam means. It comes from a root word being, yes, to be bitter. Yes, to be in contention. Yes, to be in quarreling. Yes, to be... But I want you to turn to Exodus, the 15th chapter, and verse 21 and 22. Remember, people sometimes are named after what they do, not what their real name is. What does it say there? I can read it in King James. And Miriam, the prophetess, verse 20. Now, this goes on here, and it says, Miriam, she had the song, sing the Lord, and in the very first part of Exodus 15th chapter is Moses who said that. Now she put it into music. She put it into tambourine. She was a woman that could able to obtain some words, and she's talented. Well, God gave her the talent to be able to. Now, when she was a little girl, what kind of little girl was she? Yeah, to her mother, and did exactly what her mother wanted to do. And Miriam, the little girl. The mother didn't say, by the way, tell them that I'm the mother. No, she went and she told the woman, says, you need a nurse. I know a nurse that will nurse her. And guess who? Miriam knew it was going to be her mother. So we don't have a negative thing about Miriam, except at this one point in time in history. And it's very fascinating that her name means rebellion. Oh, fascinating. Now I want you to turn to another place in the Bible where God gives her honor. Honor. Let's go to Micah chapter 6. Now, what I want to do today is I want to put the cushion that side us down on how horrible Miriam was. She actually repented. After those 7 days, what do you think she was like? A bitter lady or humble one? Yeah. This is my... Look at what he says here. We are in chapter 6 of Micah and verse 3 and 4. Now, God is talking against the people. My people, what have I done to you? Now that I have, and how have I wearied you? How have I troubled you? Testify against me. What is it? As I brought you up from the land of Egypt, redeemed you from the house of bondage, and I sent Moses, Aaron, and Miriam before you. She was very much a part of the Exodus. It wasn't just Moses. It wasn't just Aaron. It also was Miriam. Now, that's the Lord of God. I used her to bring you out of bondage. Now, is that a negative thing about her? Or is that a positive thing? The only negative thing we got here is in the 12th chapter of Numbers. Now, what's the story behind the story? Now, Tammy said, the issue of the woman just like has no value. That's true. There's no point in it. But then, let's go on here. Let's go back to Numbers. And we go to verse 2. And they said, they said, has Yahweh indeed spoken only to Moses? Has he not also spoken also to us? And guess who heard it? Who heard it? The Lord. Moses didn't hear it. Moses had no conversation with it. They were not there. He wasn't there in the presence. Now, what did the Lord do? Verse 12. Very fast. This is old English. And the Lord spoke suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and to Miriam. That doesn't mean like, oh, come here quick. No, he was raising his voice up and he was angry, fierce. He brought all three of them. Brought them unto what's called the Tabernacle of Moed. All right? So he's coming there. And he brought them up, just the three of them. Nobody else was there. Just the three of them. And then the Lord sped, and he said, by the way, come down. Stood before, God stood up before the tabernacle of the door of Moed. And he said, he called, and he come down, three tabernacles. And Yahweh came down from the pillar and stood in the doorway and called Aaron and Miriam. Moses, now, heck, I'd picture yourself here. There's three people here, you know. Let's say here's Moses, and here's Aaron, here's Miriam. Now, they're all called because God wanted Moses to hear something. If Moses wasn't supposed to hear it, just the two of them would have been called. Why was it important for God to call Moses there? Was he going to correct Moses? No. So he called for two others. Go ahead.
Well, it may have been the fact that Moses needs to be aware of his situation and what it can bring on, as well as what do you do when these things happen?
Okay, we'll take a look at that. Which we know later on, man, Moses was challenged. We also later on that Aaron was challenged. Okay. And Moses knew what to do. Yes.
I was just thinking out of the mouth of two or three witnesses. So the third witness was going to be Moses, as Moses would be attest to the third.
Now, we are witnesses of everything here now, aren't we?
Aaron and Miriam.
And we are now witnesses because we are witnesses of hearing the word of God.
Yeah.
Your question.
Much what? More of a statement. When I read this, I was thinking, okay, well, here's Abba, the father, and here's the siblings that are quarreling amongst themselves, and I'm going to reprimand you.
Just two of them. Moses was not part of the quarrel.
Well, I know he wasn't being reprimanded, but when you
But they were quarreling amongst themselves. They were attacking.
Yeah, I realize that.
Moses.
I'm picturing siblings, right, in general, attacking each other, and then they're called to the carpet because... The
right. Now let's put back
carpet.
In time of history just a moment. How old was Moses when he had to finally leave his mommy and his daddy? 2 years old. Now, total separation. He had no contact with his mom or his dad. Had no real contact with Miriam or Aaron. Who did God? He was over there now in the king's palace, and this woman's taking care of her, and she's feeding from 2 years old. Do you think he got to visit his mommy and daddy every day? Get to know his brother and his sister every day? No. So there was a definite separation between Moses and Aaron and Miriam. Complete separation. Yes?
Besides, he's the little brother.
Now, as we continue on in this story, you're going to recognize something about Aaron. All right? Well, let's continue on for right now. So we have a picture of these brother and sister. One is probably about 2 years apart. Maybe I think she was probably around 6 years old, plus or minus. I don't know. Old enough, the little girl, to be able to follow down and do what her mommy wants her to do. She wasn't 3 years old or 4 years old. She had to be about, in my personal opinion, my personal thinking, but it means nothing. But around the age of maybe six. 6 year old could do an awful lot of things. Okay? Especially, but more carefully. Especially a girl at 6 years old seems to do more things that mommy wants them to do than a boy at 6 years old. That's my personal thought. I've had experiences, you know, in my life. Anyway, so we're looking here at this particular point, and suddenly they called them down, and only two of them. So here is Aaron, and here is Miriam. They had to step forward closer while Moses was back there. Now, picture Moses had no idea at all what was spoken about him. He had no knowledge. He was ignorant of it, right? So we're going to find out something, why God wanted Moses to hear something, and even for us and today to understand what is written is for our admonition, for our understanding, and that God grants us wisdom. It's a very special place in the life of Moses that's not ever been with anybody else. He said, now hear my words. Verse 26. Now when he says, hear my words, I don't think he said, by the way, I want to talk with you. I just want you to know something. If I'm going to have a prophet, I'm going to just talk to them in dreams, and I'm just going to talk to them in visions. No, I'm not going to do that with Moses. You think he was soft-spoken? Or do you think he said he was angry? Now, ever know that when God is angry, does he ever raise his voice? Almost every time I talk about him angry, his voice raises up, right? On Mount Sinai, was it a quiet, calm, Ten Commandment reading? Or did it terrify the people so much they couldn't move? So the power of the voice of God is awesome. And so you picture this and it being said. Now, so he said this, I will make myself known to the prophet in a vision and speak to him in a dream. And later on also says, translate, a riddle. I speak to them in words that is a riddle. Now, you look at the written prophets. Fascinating. Right? A riddle. And sometimes there's a story there. And what about this grapevine? Remember, Jeff wrote the other day that in this one of these things, there's Isaiah about this vineyard. And he uses a riddle. Lose a little? I mean, what does that mean? I don't know. But you can get to understand God by listening to what the prophet has to say and listening to the riddle or, quote, that vision. Now, who had a vision before Moses came on the scene? Abraham. And after Abraham, it was Jacob. Jacob had three of them. And then after him was Joseph. Now, remember, Joseph, he didn't understand the dreams until way late in life, I should say. Oh, that's what it was all about. But when God gave Moses, Abraham, a dream or a vision, you remember that one where he had to separate the animals, but not, and a fire went through them? That was a vision. It literally says that. And Abraham understood the vision. Could he explain it? No. But he knew in the future what was going to happen to his relatives in the future. But he didn't really tell Abraham everything. Now he turns to him in verse 7. My servant is not so. Who is, what's that word? Trustful, faithful, and all of my house. Capitalize that word my and capitalize that word house. Because it's God's house, it's not Moses' house. Verse 8 has very fascinating terminology in Hebrew. Well, I'm going to read it in the Greek, English, Old English. With him I speak mouth to mouth. Did you hear that? Mouth to mouth. It's like face to face. And what does he say? And not in dark speeches. So that means he was saying before, when Moses was existed, he was speaking in what? He's speaking in what? Dark places. Unable to be clear. Unable to be seen clearly. That's basically what that statement means. Let's go on. And it's interesting Hebrew, English language. I'd look it up in Hebrew to find out if it really makes sense. And in the similitude of Yahuwah. What? I looked it up. It does mean in Hebrew something that is potentially like this. Or something that is like this. In Genesis, in the beginning God created, that very same word is that he created them after its kind, after its similitude, its picture of. And what did God do? Formed man in what? In his image. Here, now he's saying with Moses, this is what I am doing. I'm not doing with you, Miriam. I'm not doing with you, Aaron. Because when I speak to you, and Miriam, I speak to you, Aaron, I speak to you in dark places. Not so with Moses. Now, picture yourself being Moses there for a moment. And he's saying, wow. And basically in Hebrew, it means that in the form or in the image or the likeness or the representation of Yahweh. Remember, I told you some time ago that Moses portrays the function of God. And I told you what Aaron is a picture of. The Son of God. All right. Question. What is the picture of Miriam? A woman. It's just a woman, yeah. All right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just asking that question. There's a reason why she actually had to be corrected for 7 days for purification and to make her holy before God. And did she remain holy? No, we could say, no, she didn't. She did all this. But you can't find anything bad about her ever since, can you? Wow. So she pictures someone or something that needs to be chastised. And did she get chastised? Yes, she got chastised. What did she do? Remain in her bitterness, resentment, her anger, her rebellion? You don't find any more of that in her, do you? Nothing's written about her after that. About horrible and stupid and dumb. Now, we have to go through the next man, of course, and this is Aaron. Which looks like it's unfair. Right? Let's go on. By the way, before we go there, in the Young's Living Translation, it uses that in the form of Yahweh, he beholds or looks like or responds. Yes.
So did God present himself to Moses like a hologram?
Well, I don't know if that's a Hebrew word or not. I can't answer that question, to the honest truth. I couldn't find a word translated into hologram in Hebrew, but maybe it's there. I don't, well, not in the Bible. I couldn't find it. But, you know, no. It's a picturing of how God is, how God thinks, how God acts. Now, you remember the time he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights? The second time? The second time? Very fascinating about that period of time. Did God up there on the second time, what did he say to Moses the second time? Let's go back and take a look. This may help us to understand what he said. It's mouth to mouth. And I don't speak to him in darkness. I speak to him plain and clearly. I don't speak in parables. I don't speak in riddles. I speak to him face to face. Oh, let's see. I forgot to write it down. On the it's in Exodus. I forgot to write down the scripture. Excuse me for doing that. But I'll read it. If I can find that real quickly, maybe. The second time he was on the mountain, and Yahweh passed before him and proclaimed or said something. And he said, Yahweh, Yahweh, El, merciful and gracious. Because see, Moses says, I don't know who you are. I don't understand you. I don't know what you're doing previously before that. Long-suffering, abundant in goodness and in truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquities, transgressions, and sin. What do you see on that? Well, there, that's the Day of Atonement. Now, he was there for 40 days. What else did he talk about? It's very brief. He dropped down and says, behold, I'll make a covenant before all your people. And I will do marvelous such as was never done before, ever before on the earth, nor to any nation. And your people, whom you have, shall see the work of Yahweh. Me and the house of Israel will see it. When you read Matthew and Mark and Luke, the first opening church, there's certain individual people that they were able to see what it was all about. Those are the people of the son. Those are the people of the house of Israel. The woman, the priest, and there was a elderly man. I can't remember who it was right offhand, but they saw, and it said that two nations would saw the light out of darkness. They were able to see something for the first time. What else do you think God talked to Moses about? The first time in the mountain, the tabernacle, all the details of all the ark and the covenant and the mercy seat, that wasn't the first time. He's up there for 40 days for that particular thing. He said, see, you built it in this manner. He came down from the mountain and broke the tablets, remember?
Yeah.
Now, they built this thing, but God called him back up again. No, he called, God said, come, I don't know you, Moses, I don't know who you are. And so Moses therefore did it. While he was up there for 40 days, the people were building the tabernacle, materials for the tabernacle. They weren't just sitting around being idle and saying, what do we do now? Let's pay pinochle. They didn't have cars those days. Anyway, they were working and doing all of it. Tells you the book of Exodus, all that stuff. Because Moses asked in chapter 33 of Exodus, I pray, verse 13, I pray that if you have found grace in your sight, show me now your way. Did you get that? This is the 13th verse of Exodus chapter 33. Show me your way. You mean Moses didn't know the way? Well, he knew where they were going to go. the way into the promised land, but that wasn't the statement. That I may know you, that I may find grace in your sight. And consider that this nation is your people. That was the question. That was the challenge, you might say. That was the request of Moses before he went to the mountain the second time. Do you think God told him that? I've got to read what he said he's going to do. I've got to do a thing, a miracle that not unheard of in any nation at any time. And it's going to happen to your people. All right? I want to go. Oh, that's verse 34, chapter 34. That's where I do have it. I just didn't realize what it said here. And beginning in chapter 6. And Yahweh passed before him and proclaimed, Yahweh, Yahweh, El. When I looked up this fascinating word, what does El really mean? Well, it breaks it down to one, several different ways, all the way down to a ram. And it breaks it one more down, prominent, strong. So we have the word El, which we use the word meaning God. It means one who is like a ram. And guess who was caught in the thicket? Ah, awesome thought. A very pronounced, a very strong. But what happened to the ram that was caught in the thicket? It got killed. Its strength, its power, its might, its preeminence over everything, gone. Wiped out. Ceased to be. I find that very fascinating when he used that word, and I had to break it down. Then he said, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, abounding in goodness and truth, and forgiving iniquities of the transgressions unto the third and fourth generation, so on and so forth. And that's a very fascinating thing now. Now, this is talking with Moses. I want to talk example here. This is just an example of a one-to-one communication. On the second time Moses on that mountain, when Moses said, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're doing. I don't understand what you're thinking. Let me know. And he said to Miriam and to Aaron, I speak mouth to mouth. I don't speak in dark things with Moses. I explain to him clearly who I am, what I'm doing, period. But to you two, I'm going to speak in parables. I'm going to speak in riddles. I'm going to speak in darkness, but not with Moses. Because he is the similitude, the one that pictures me. Aaron pictures the Son of God, and Marian pictures. I think it may be more closely related because he's talking about your nation. She probably pictures the nation of the house of Israel. All tribes. And we have the Apostle Paul telling us that those who were not of are grafted onto that house. House. Remember, he said, Moses is faithful in all my house. He didn't say, is faithful unto me. He is faithful unto my house. So what's his house?
All of us.
Ah, that's true. Now, let's just take a little bit of a minute here. Okay, if you don't mind. Let's go back, or should say, let's go forward to the book of Hebrews. We're going to be in the third chapter. Because the key word that caught me there was my house. It triggered me. Oh, I know that's supposed to be. Right there in Hebrews. Where the writer of Hebrews said, guess who is the house belong to? God. Chapter 3. Yeah. In verse 1. I'm just putting a parallel if you can. From what I read, when he made that statement to Miriam and to Aaron, my house. All right. Now, let's go here. And he says, therefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest. Now, he called the Son of God an apostle. What does the apostle mean? One who is sent. Simple as that. Of our, it says confession, in Greek is closely stated, of our acknowledgement of Jesus Christ. Acknowledgement of the apostle and the high priest. Our acknowledgement. Not our profession is a horrible word in English. More like closely to the Greek, it means acknowledgement or awareness of or accepting and knowing who our apostle is and who our high priest is. Now we go on to verse 2. Who was faithful to the apostle and high priest, unto him, G-O-D, who appointed him, Yahshua, as also Moses was appointed in all of his God's house. Numbers, 7th chapter, verse 12. Continue on. Verse 3. And the one that has been counted worthy to be more glory than Moses, in such that he, God, who build the house, has more honor than the house. Remember the word, my house? Continue on. For every house is built by someone, but he who is building all things is God. Way back, 12th chapter, he says Moses is faithful in my house. Moses wasn't building the house. God was building the house. And here we have Hebrews explaining that very plain. And verse 4, and Moses indeed faithful, what we just got to read, in all of his, that is God's house, as a servant. For what reason? For the testimony of all things that would be spoken. You mean something was told to Moses? You mean God talked mouth to mouth and explained to Moses in detail what it's all about in clarity and understanding and in truth? Because he, Moses, is a representation of the Word of God at that point. But the Son of God was going to come on later. Now he says, verse 6, also Christ as Son over his, God's, own house, whose house we are, if we hold fast and the confidence and the rejoicing of hope firm to the end. So I know Yahshua says, I'll build my house. Actually, he's building the house of God. That's what's happening. He said something. He says, where I am going, what's he going to do? I am going to build many houses, many homes. But he won't build a single thing, a single home, unless the Father himself says, build a house for Peter. Okay. Build a house for James. I got it. Build a house for Matthew. Yeah, I got it. Build a house for Judah. Yeah, I got it. He's given assignments because he's been appointed to do such. Right? The high priest is appointed to do certain things. And here the Son of God is doing it. And he's doing the building that God wants him to do. And it's God's house. Remember that whole holy city of Jerusalem coming down? Quote, that's the house of God, spiritually speaking. Let's continue on here now. Back to Numbers. This is the part that's really kind of hard to understand. And everybody thinks, wow, this proves that God actually is kind of like, it says he's not respecter of all people, but wait a minute. He didn't do anything to Aaron. So therefore he had more respect for Aaron than Miriam, but he had greater respect for Moses, right? That's what kind of looks like, doesn't it? Well, let's pay attention closely. I'm going to find something about Aaron here. And the cloud departed from off the tabernacle of appointments And behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. This is a deadly disease, skin disease. And Aaron, what did he do? He looked at his sister. What was his reaction? Well, I'm sure glad got her, not me. His heart went out not for himself. His heart and desire and his love toward his sister was toward his sister, not himself. He probably in the guts of things, it should have been me there as well. Why did he not curse me like he cursed Miriam? Why Miriam and not me? How many times do people feel that way, especially in the battle of war? How come I am alive and everybody else is dead? I don't deserve to live. They were greater and more important and more awesome than me. Who am I to be alive? Now, we could say, well, that didn't what he said. His heart and mind was toward his sister. And the first thing he did was what? He went not to God. And let's put it in English. And Aaron said unto Moses, Adonai, I beseech thee, let not this sin come upon us. Us. Who were and we have been done foolish things. Yes, he repented, but on us, he saw the devastation. He expressed something very funny in English. Let her not be as one dead, or dying one, the one that's going to die. Don't let her die, Moses. Don't let her die. And what did Moses do? He says, well, I didn't know this, but you and her was upset with me marrying this lady. Well, let her die. He yelled out, hear me now, so says Moses. Elohim, I beseech thee. And what was Elohim's nature? What was his response? Well, okay. Remember on the mountain, merciful, kind, long-suffering, mercy that has no end, forgiving people of their sins, their transgressions, and iniquities. What just happened? Oh, he didn't kill her. She was heading toward death. And then God says, okay, let's put a parallel here, Moses. I'm speaking very plainly to you, Moses. Would she not be ashamed to spit in her father's face? Yeah, she should be ashamed. Now, let her be shut out of the camp for 7 days. And then afterwards, you can bring her back in again. Now, let me ask you a question. Was, quote, this action of Miriam and Aaron, did it affect the travel to the promised land? Yeah. Yes, it did. It affected every body in the house of Israel and even the sojourners that are with them. They could not travel any farther until she was accepted back. And we already know what it says in Leviticus about how she must now purify herself and all this. She had to go through all that, quote, unbelievable stuff, right? To get herself clean. No, she was repentant. As you don't say anything more against her, right? I find it very fascinating that the mother, Yeshua HaMashiach, is Miriam. I don't think it's a play on words. It is that the Son of God came out from a rebellious nation, a rebellious people. That's my personal thinking. So I think it's very fascinating. So now we're at this point. Now I want to backtrack. It seems like God is still a respecter of persons, right? Well, let's think about something. When Aaron was responsible for the golden calf. What happened to him? Nothing. What happened to people who participated in the golden calf? Death. Why didn't he kill Aaron? Yes, Moses said, I prayed for him not to take you. Why did not God kill Aaron? Here the second incident shows up. And it's been on their way now. We're still in the second year, traveling toward the promised land. And here again, why didn't God do something and punish Aaron? He had mercy. He had mercy on Aaron in the first place, and mercy on Aaron in the second place. How many bad things have Aaron done that we see written in the Word of God? No, he didn't kill his son. His son died because of their actions, but not of Moses's. I mean, of Aaron's. Now, we know this much from reading what we just read. Now, Moses is a symbol of representing the God himself or Yahweh. That's what it says there. We also have a picture because it says Aaron pictures Yahshua, or should we say the Son of God. Because what did Aaron supposed to wear? What did that garment, that plate say? It's very important. Always try to remember this. All of your life. Try to, holiness unto Yahweh. That was on his cross. By the way, every priest after that, if they violated, it cost them their life. Not with Aaron. Why? Is he showing us something through the life of Aaron? Did Aaron ever show up in Scripture of being mean, hostile, angry, bold, courageous, arrogant? No. He even was told by Moses, take your golden, your incense and run into the plague. He didn't hesitate. That plague was killing people. And what did he do? Ran into it. Stopped. He stopped death. That's the Son of God, stopping death. So we can look at this picture in the 12th chapter saying, we don't quite understand why Aaron got away with it, but Aaron pictures the actions of the Son of God. Not actions of the man Aaron, but the actions of what the Son of God will do and is doing. Okay? How many times, not in your life, but in people's life, have you pictured, maybe it's time you look at your own life, has, quote, the Son of God, ran into death to prevent you from dying. Wow. Do you ever think about that? That's the picture of what Aaron was to represent. The picture of Moses, he's supposed to represent. And Miriam, well, we may have some questions about that. My personal thinking, and only my personal thinking, since her name was rebellious, and what did God say about the house of Israel? Stiff-necked and rebellious. Guess what? Did Miriam pay the price? Yes, she did for herself. But it's a picture of, I want repentance. Now, Miriam did, but not the house of Israel. So Miriam pictures people who have actually said, yes, God, from that point on. Do you understand what I'm saying? You won't find spoken bad about her all the way into Malachi. And God said, I used her as much as I used Aaron, as much as I used Moses to bring you out of bondage. Isn't that an awesome story? So there's more in this 12th chapter than just what's on the surface. Had nothing to do with the woman, right? I mean, him marrying this Ethiopian or this Cushite woman. Dead issue. It wasn't even brought up. It was, God has spoken to us, has he not? No, I have not. Not like I speak unto Moses. And now, Revelations. After the eight bowls are poured out, then there is a song. And it's a song of the servant of Moses. After that comes a song of the Lamb. So what is the song of Moses about? What is the song of the Lamb about? You need to ask that your own question to find out.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L dot I-N-F-O, hillel.info.